am a police officer here to let you know that the call is coming from inside the house, Taylor.
And I'm a cat eating a plastic-wrapped corpse, Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files. This week, as a continuation of our holiday celebration here on the Final Girl Files, we watched 1974's Black Christmas, directed by Bob Clark, starring Olivia Hussey, Keir Duella, Margot Kidder, Andrea Martin, Lynn Griffin, and John Saxon. Just a sexy little Christmas slasher, baby.
It's a sleigh, is what it is. Like, it's just a sleigh.
Truly, truly.
Both in the sense of sleigh ending in A-Y and also E-I-G-H.
Sleigh literal.
Sleigh.
Parentheses.
Sleigh like Santa's sleigh.
Yeah, yeah.
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 You get it.
All right, let's just run down our triggers real quick. Before we get started, we've got abortion, stalking, sexual harassment, and just a whole lot of general misogyny. If that's not cool with you, probably skip this one. But also don't watch the remake because I've heard bad things about the remake. So just skip it all together and find some other Christmas horror movie to watch.
Watch Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Watch Krampus. Watch The Conjuring 2.
Yeah, there are many other options for you.
Plot summary, shall we?
Yes, we
shall. I think that's it. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
As winter break begins, a group of sorority sisters begin to receive anonymous, lascivious phone calls. Soon, one of them goes missing from the sorority house, and a local adolescent girl is murdered, leading the girls to suspect that a serial killer is on the loose. But no one realizes just how near the culprit is. The calls are, in fact, coming from inside the house. Sorry to spoil.
I did spoil that in the first 5 seconds of the podcast, but it's okay.
You know, actually, that's going to lead us into discussions. Maybe let's do memories with the movie first before I start going off, because I have a lot to say about this movie.
So do I. Oh my gosh. What are your memories with this movie? Because I think this is the first time you've seen it, but I think your other attempts.
Yeah, this is the first time I've seen it all the way through. And for the past, like, maybe 4 or 5 years, I've been like, okay, this is the year I'm going to watch Black Christmas. And then I just never get around to it. And I tried to last year and I got about halfway through. But unfortunately, Jace and I, friend of the pod, Jace, my brother and I were watching it on Christmas Eve. And on Christmas Eve, my family and I already, like, I don't know if you guys have listened to our episode on A Christmas Carol. If you haven't, go do that. It's a good one. But we usually watch that on Christmas Eve. And by the time we were finished with that, it was like super late and I was very tired. But I was like, you know what? No, Black Christmas is only like 90 minutes. I'm sure I'll be able to like get through it and then go to sleep. I was not. Halfway through, I was like, Jace, I'm so sorry. I have to go to sleep. So this is finally the year that I sat down and watched Black Christmas all the way through. And I very much enjoyed it. So
you prioritized self-care.
I did. I also prioritized the fact that I knew Jace was going to wake me up at like 7 in the morning the next day.
Yes.
What are your memories of this movie, Taylor?
As many other films on this podcast do, this goes back to Bravo's 100 Scariest Movie Moments, which I watched when I was about 15 or 16, and which started me down the road to like legitimate horror fan status.
To being here talking about Christmas Carol BDSM on this podcast. Yeah.
Exactly. And this movie has a spot on that list. And I remember the special had Olivia Hussey on to talk about the film, which was cool. I thought that was really cool. And she told one of the funniest stories. Because, like, you know, that special has a lot of actors talking about, you know, oh, like a weird experience making the movie or like a weird experience related to the movie or, you know, direct whatever. It's, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's a talking head interview special, you know. And Olivia Hussey, when she was talking about making Black Christmas, she was saying, you know, like years later, she was saying that she did a movie with Steve Martin. And when he met her for the first time, the first thing that he ever said to her was like, you're in my favorite movie of all time. And Olivia Hussey is naturally thinking he's talking about Romeo and Juliet, which is probably her most famous role besides this film.
Yeah, if you studied Romeo and Juliet in English class in middle school, you've seen Olivia Hussey as Juliet.
You know. And she started to say, oh, you know, Romeo and Juliet, that's very nice of you to say. And Steve Martin cuts her off and goes, no, Black Christmas.
What a king.
Black Christmas is my favorite movie of all time. And she was shocked.
I love that.
I just find that story so delightful, and it's so on brand for Steve Martin, it really from what is. I know about him as a person.
Actually, I heard about this movie. I mean, I had known that it exists. I think, like, culturally, it's one of, like, the big, like, if you think about Christmas horror movies, like, Black Christmas is one of the first ones that gets mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I heard about this movie being talked about, like, by, in, like, film circles, because this movie was actually a huge influence on Saw. Like, James Wan. Oh,
interesting. I fully thought you were going to say Halloween.
Well, that too. This movie shares a lot of DNA with Halloween. I don't know the full story behind that, but I know that they were sort of conceptualized together or by, like, similar directors. Or I know John Carpenter maybe was, like, talking to Bob Clark or something like that. I don't know. I probably should have done research. But I know these movies kind of share a lot of DNA. But
I'm interested in how it connects to Saw. Please elaborate.
Well, there is a there's a shot in the first Saw movie that is basically just a shot from Black Christmas. If there's a scene where, it is the scene where I assume most of the people listening to this podcast have seen Saw because that was our very first episode. It's the scene right before Zepp kidnaps Diana.
Mm-hmm.
And it zooms into his eye in the closet door, and it is just lifted directly from the scene in Black Christmas where Billy is, like, talking to Jess at the very end.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
But yeah, that's always how I've kind of known about Black Christmas most prominently in my life, is through Saw.
As many things in our lives do.
All roads lead to Saw. All roads lead to James Wan in my life. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm. Whether or not you want to be, you will always be on Mr. Wan's wild ride.
I will. I really, really will.
As will many others of us.
It's because the fictional Warrens are just the blueprint for my favorite kind of ship.
God, that's so fucking true. That's so fucking true.
So, this movie... Holy shit, I have so much to say.
Oh, I'm so interested in what you have to say since this was your first time seeing this.
What was I going to say? What was I talking about before we, like, did the plot and stuff? Like, what was I going to say about that? I completely forgot.
I don't know, probably, like, something with, the, like, the feminism.
I mean, the feminism of it all is probably a good place to start.
Because that's the thing with this movie, right? Like, it's, like, the thing that everybody talks about.
Yeah, it's, like, the most surprisingly progressive movie from the 70s I've ever seen. Like, every interaction between men and women in this is just like, hey, women don't get taken seriously by men, and it's bad.
Hi, everybody. Friendly reminder, misogyny exists.
Maybe the real killer was the misogyny we read along the way.
Truly, truly, that is the moral of this film.
I mean, I think... the abortion stuff is really interesting from a progressive standpoint because Peter is framed as being fucking scary for not wanting to let Jess get an abortion.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that is one of the things that leads Jess to, spoiler alert, falsely suspect that he is the killer. Is this idea of, like, oh, he's lashing out at me and the other women in the house because he's angry that I told him that I wanted to have an abortion.
Yeah.
And the movie never asks you to look at things from his perspective at all. It's very firmly on Jess's side. The scene where she tells him, like, in no uncertain terms, I'm going to have an abortion and you have no right to try to bully me into... having this baby that I don't want to have.
She literally says to him, like, and this is the later scene before, like, after she first tells him, but she's like, you know, you told me about your dreams that you have and you're gonna give them all up for this baby, I guess, but I have dreams too. Like, I'm a person too. There are things that I want to do that are not raising a child.
Yeah, because not only does he, you know, get very angry at her for telling him that she's going to have this abortion. Not that she wants to, that she's going to have an abortion. Later on, this other scene where the two of them are talking, it basically, like the framework of the scene is that he shows up and he's just like, hi, I just want to let you know that I'm dropping the thing that I have been dreaming about doing for my entire life, which is being a concert pianist, so that you and I can get married.
It's not even like he says we're going to get married as if it's just this like certain thing and that she has no say in.
And it's very strange that he doesn't even consider the idea that if he shows up and just is like, yep, we're doing this now, that she would ever tell him no.
Yeah.
There's this idea that, like, if she sees that I'm willing to give up on my thing that I'm very passionate about, then of course she will realize that she should, you know, give up on the things that she wants to do and, you know, we can settle down and have and raise this child together. And she, like you said, just looks at him and says, no, I'm not doing that. You can do that. I'm not interested.
Super big, super great basis for a great parenting situation, by the way, is both of the parents resenting the child.
Yeah, absolutely. If you both gave up on your greatest goal in life for the sole purpose of getting married and raising this child, it will not foster any resentment towards that baby at all.
No, it's going to be perfectly healthy and totally fine.
For sure. For sure, for sure, for sure.
That kid's going to grow up so normal.
I think it also shows just like how naive and immature Peter is, especially when compared to Jess, because that doesn't even factor into his decision making.
Yeah, and like, not to mention, talking about the immaturity, the way that he takes out his feelings by fucking smashing a piano.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, dude. Fine.
Wait, my girlfriend's getting an abortion. I'm gonna beat the shit out of my piano.
I'm gonna be violent about it.
Like, and you know, Jess does later say that he is not, like, generally a violent person, or at least that she at first doesn't think that he would lash out in a physically violent way when they're first talking to her about the possibility that he could be the killer. But once the end of the film comes along, she's pretty willing to think that he could be capable of doing that. So I don't know what that says about their relationship. Like,
yeah, I wrote down in my notes, like, the line is like, oh, he's so gentle most of the time. And I just wrote doubt next to that.
Yeah, like, I think my note was similar. I literally wrote most of the time. What do you mean most of the time?
Hey, that's not all of the time.
Jess, are you saying he's violent some of the time? Hey, man, doesn't take that long to do some murder, you know?
Yeah. I also had a note that just said I want to punch Peter so bad.
He's so... even before you find out that he is, like, an asshole for other reasons, he just looks like a douchebag with his fucking stupid Beatles hair
and his full green
turtleneck sweater. Yeah, he just looks like a pretentious douchebag.
Ugh.
He inspires hatred in me.
While we're talking about wardrobe, should we do that thing we do for all 70s movies and talk about some of the wardrobe choices in this movie?
I mean, if we don't start off talking about Jess's iconic, like, overalls...
Oh, the little vest moment.
Yes, yes, with the two hands over the chest. I love that sweater.
Yes. Oh, it's so good. There was I honestly thought she was going to be like a character. There is an extra in one of the scenes that has this like fur trimmed leather jacket as she's walking by, and I was like, I want that jacket.
Oh my god! And also, Phyllis and her boyfriend. Claire's boyfriend, when they're in the police station.
The big fur coat.
The boyfriend in particular is wearing just like this massive fur coat.
It is the biggest fuck off coat you've ever seen, and it is so glorious. I want it so bad.
If I saw that coat in a thrift store, I would snatch that shit up immediately.
I also want to give a quick shout out to Barb's like butchy outfit we first see her in. God, Margot Kidder is so fucking hot.
The choker moment that she has going on.
I love a choker. I'm wearing a choker right now.
Choker, and she looks very good in it. She, like, with that, like, half-unbuttoned shirt.
And the, like, the bun hairstyle, oh my god.
She looks great.
She's hot. She's so fucking hot. Oh my god.
Oh my god. I would like to talk about Barb, because... I love Barb so much.
I love Barb, and I love Miss Mac, or Mrs. Mac.
Mrs. Mac is so delightful every time she's on screen.
She's such an icon.
I love the increasing comedic beat of, like, every room in the house that she goes into, she has a bottle of booze hidden somewhere.
She's such a queen.
Like, you know, at first she pulls the book off the shelf and opens it up, and you're like, oh, teehee, she's got her little whiskey stash, you know, in the book. And then she pulls a bottle out of the toilet, she pulls a bottle out of the closet, and then gets mad when the closet bottle is empty.
It's so good.
It's like, girl, do you have booze everywhere in this house?
She does, and she's allowed to do that. Good for her.
She's got a bottle in every single room. And you know what? She should respect. Probably, that's not healthy, but also, it's funny in the film.
It's not, but also, like, respect, queen.
Respect, queen. Also, speaking of this film and alcohol, I would like to give a special shout out to Barb just casually pouring beer down that little kid's throat.
Yes, and her, like, popping open a beer can in the fucking police station.
She's such a queen.
I love her. I was so upset when she died. I love
that the first scene where they get the first obscene phone call, or not, it's not the first that they've gotten, obviously, because, like, the dialogue tells you they've been getting these for however many weeks, but, like, it's the first one that we see in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Barb, frustrated, just grabs the phone from Jess and just shouts into it. She's like, you should stick your tongue in a wall socket or something.
Yes.
Oh, she's so funny.
That'll give you a charge.
Yes, exactly. I also love when she's talking on the phone to her mother at the beginning of the movie, and she's like, oh, you're a real gold-plated whore, mother.
Yes! Who talks to their mom like that?
I mean, Barb clearly has a not great relationship with her mother, so.
Clearly, but, like, holy shit.
Even if you and your mom are not on the best terms, I mean, just calling her a gold-plated whore, still not something that most people do. Man, I feel fucking awful for Barb.
Yeah, while we're talking about, like, the phone calls, did Olivia Hussey just get cast for her ability to go, hello? Hello?
I know! Like, she answers the phone the exact same way every time, and it's delightful.
Like, did they cast, like, obviously she does a great job, like, acting in this movie. That's obviously not why they cast her, but, like, was that a factor? Was the ability to answer the phone, like, a plus to have in this fucking movie?
Yeah, because she does answer it the exact same way.
Every time, and it's
wonderful. She picks up the phone, and she'll go, hello? Hello?
It's
very good. I also love that she is, like, inexplicably using her natural British accent. The movie takes place in, it is a Canadian movie, but it does take place in America. There are American flags in the police station. I mean, I guess she could just
that's
be.
That's also why this was an influence on Saw.
Yeah. God damn it. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Carrie Ellis. Thank you, King.
But, like, Carrie Elwes at least was trying to do an American accent. She was not even attempting. She was just using her normal voice.
Yeah.
I think I'm, like, 90% sure she's, like, British and Argentinian or something.
Mm-hmm.
So,
she's got
an
accent.
Yeah, she's got an accent. And it's funny because, like, no one else in the movie does.
Yeah, they're
it's
all.
It's just, like, there's never even a line where they're, like, ah, ha, ha, Jess, like, Jess is the, you know, she's, you know, doing study abroad here for this, you know, something like that. Like, no. Yeah. She's just British.
She's just British. Well, British people do come to America for school, I will say.
Yeah, that's true. They do be doing that. I love Olivia Hussey so much in this movie. She is an absolute delight.
She's a great final girl.
And, like, final girl straight up murdering someone who is just flagrantly not the killer. Love that the movie ends with this, like, hopeful, like, oh, she did it, she killed him. And then the movie is like, no, he's still there.
See, like, is that the implication, or is the implication that, like, Billy killed the boyfriend, Peter, and left Jess, just whatever. I guess he wouldn't have left her.
Because she was holding that fire poker.
That's true.
I think she's meant to have killed Peter.
Okay. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
That final shot is fucking harrowing.
Oh my god, it really is.
Just the slow zoom out and just the sound of the telephone ringing.
Oh my god, the telephone ringing over the credits is
so scary.
So much.
And they keep cutting across the film to that exact same shot of the house. It begins and ends on, and at various points in the middle, on that same shot of the house.
Yeah. Just the idea that, like, that window is so high up that, like, the policeman outside the house does not see it and does not see that that corpse is right in the window.
Oh my god, like, it's so scary.
Oh my god.
The fact that nobody found Claire's and Mrs. Mack's bodies.
See, and, like, I thought you kind of think they do at first, because one of the policemen, like, pokes his head in and is like, hey, we need to take these bodies down to, like, another morgue because the hospital doesn't have enough room for them. So, like, you kind of get a little bit of a fake out, and then the camera pans up like, nope, they are still up there.
Yeah, and I think one of the scariest things is that Mrs. Mack had already told Jess, or maybe it was one of the other girls, but she told somebody that she was going to her sister's for Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and no, so she wouldn't be there for the rest of the night. So they had no reason to think her not being there was suspicious.
Yeah. It's so fucked up, by the way, that this whole thing takes place over the span of, like, a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
They kept, like, being like, oh, yeah, this girl was found murdered in the park tonight. And I'm like, tonight? Oh, right. It's still the same night.
Yeah.
Like, God.
That poor fucking kid.
Oh my god, I know.
What? How old did they say she was? She was like 13?
13.
Ugh. God, so bad.
So bad.
I think, like, one of the things that I realized upon a rewatch that I did not get the first time that I watched this movie, because I haven't seen it since high school.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, there's this, like, long POV shot as, you know, funny shenanigans are going on inside the house.
Right.
There's this POV shot of Billy, like, climbing back into the attic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he goes through the yard, he gets up into the attic. And at first, like, the first time that I watched this movie, I kind of just brushed it off. Upon this second rewatch, I realized he's coming back to the house after killing that girl.
Oh my god, you're right.
Like, I did not even make that connection the first time I saw this movie, because obviously when you're watching that shot for the first time, you don't know that later on they're going to say that a little girl was killed in a park.
Yeah.
But watching it now, I'm like, oh my god, he just committed that other murder and he is coming back to the attic where he has been hiding out for weeks.
Yeah, and that's
which
the other
thing. Which is so fucking scary!
That's the other thing, too, is, like, I think when you watch this movie for the first time not knowing, like, the plot, and, like, I knew, like, a little bit about the plot this time around, obviously, because I'd watched, like, half the movie at one point. But, like, he's not coming into that attic for the first time. He's
no.
been there for weeks!
Yeah!
And I feel like you could easily, like, you know, be like, oh, he's, like, this is, like, the first time he's, like, sneaking into the house. Like, nope, he's been there for a while.
No, he's been there for weeks. He's coming back to the house.
Oh, it's
after
so bad.
After leaving to go kill a child.
It's so bad. It's so fucking bad. It's so bad out here, guys.
We need to talk about Billy, because one of the really interesting things that I find about this movie is that there are so many, like, weird threads regarding Billy that the movie refuses to elaborate on. They just sort of drop these little hints into your lap and they're like, and we're never gonna tell you about them.
And we're never gonna tell you why this little freak is so fucked up.
Who the fuck is Agnes? He keeps referencing someone named Agnes. Who is Agnes?
I mean, do you have, like, a guess?
Bear in mind that this is only the second time I've seen this movie, and the last time I saw this movie, I was a teenager. But from, like, because, like, I was really trying to pay attention to the like, what he was saying in the phone calls, and I had subtitles on, so I got a little more this time than I did previously. And trigger warning. because this is going to get really upsetting. But
well,
I think
trigger
the implication
warning for Taylor.
Well, because I think the implication is that he had a younger sister who he molested and killed.
Yeah, that's what I was also thinking.
Because he's saying, like, you know, something about, like mother and father can't find out what we did. And then there's that weird call where he's imitating Agnes telling him, stop, not now, not tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the implication is that he had a younger sister named Agnes who he molested for a while and then eventually murdered her.
Yeah, I think that's also where my mind was going.
And it's just... But the movie never tells you outright. Like, I feel like in a different and probably a worse movie, and I haven't seen either of the remakes, so maybe one or both of them do actually go into this thing, but, like, I imagine in a worse movie, it would be like, and we found this file on this guy named Billy who was, you know, put into prison for molesting and murdering his younger sister, Agnes. Like, there would be some sort of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
This movie never gives you that.
Nope. And honestly, I think it's better for it. I like movies that make you think, which is...
I agree. You have to kind of piece together from the weird shit that he says on the phone. Oh, he's so disgusting. Those phone calls are so just... Oh, they make... Like, I legitimately felt my skin crawling.
He's nasty. He's a nasty little man.
So he says some really vile shit. And at first, it's sort of like generic, gross, obscene phone call stuff where he's just sort of sexually taunting them.
Yeah.
And then it just gets into, like, weird... Like, again, like, it's like he's dropping these weird hints about himself. Scary. He's a scary guy.
He's a scary man, and naturally all of Tumblr wants to fuck him.
Of course they do. Oh.
Which, like, you know what? All the power to you.
I forgot that he has, like, a large fan
base. Get that horrible, disgusting dick, I guess.
Yeah, like, sure. Listen.
We can't judge on here.
He's not real. Go fucking wild, I guess. But, like, for me, he doesn't do it for me.
Well, he's not enough of a dill for you.
No, give him, like, 20 years. then maybe he'll do it for me.
I think it's interesting. I always think about this when I watch movies that are, like, the origin of a certain really well-known trope or genre.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think about it a lot when I watch, like, Paranormal Activity or the Blair Witch Project especially. I would love to know what kind of a gut punch it was for audiences that the calls were coming from inside the house. Because at this point, in terms of, like, horror history, the calls coming from inside the house are, like, such a standard trope that I don't think anyone would ever actually, like, do it these days.
Yeah.
Because
I mean,
like,
that and the fact that nobody really uses landlines anymore.
Well, yeah, that too.
That also kind of killed the trope, I feel like.
That's very true. But, like, I get so curious as to, like, how this impacted and how scary this was at the time, you know?
Yeah, because I think the two, like, big movies that codified this trope were this and When a Stranger Calls.
Mm-hmm.
And When a Stranger Calls came out in, I'm fuzzy on the year, but, like, after this movie, like, late 70s, maybe, like, 78 or 79.
Yeah.
So, like, this movie was, like, one of the first, if not the first, check me on that if I'm wrong, audience, but I think the first to use that trope.
Yes, Stranger Calls was 79.
79. I figured it was, like, late 70s.
Yeah.
Carol Kane is great in that movie. Unfortunately, it's really bad after, like, the first half hour. But, yeah, it's, that must have been, fuck, like, such a freaky revelation.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, because you get that a lot in, like, urban legends and stuff, too. Like, I'm thinking specifically about, like, the clown statue kind of thing, or, like, the angel statue urban myth, where it's like, we don't have a clown statue, ooh, spooky. I wonder how much that was potentially influenced by Black Christmas and When a Stranger Calls, or if those came first.
I mean, so I was doing some, like, marginal research on this movie, and, like, most discussion that I've seen on this movie says that it was inspired by the urban legends. Okay. So I think that they came first.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, I feel like it would be difficult to really pinpoint because it's hard to figure out when that urban legend started going around, you know? I'm sure it was just, I'm sure it was a thing far before the 70s, like probably maybe ever since landlines started to be a popular thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that that kind of an urban legend would come about when the technology was new because, you know, new technology is scary.
Yeah.
So you make up scary stories about the new technology that everyone suddenly has in their houses.
Exactly.
Oh, what if we used this thing for evil reasons?
What if it was evil?
What if it was evil? Which explains all of the, like, you know, like robotics, AI going to kill you stuff that's been sort of coming out the last.
Oh no, not a sentient AI.
Yeah. What some if people want to kiss the AI. Some people are afraid that it will murder them. What if it
becomes a life guy and starts talking about the ship of Theseus to me?
It all depends on whether you're in the MCU or in a horror movie. It's two very different things.
Yep.
So I feel like we're getting to the point in the podcast where we can't beat around the bush any longer, Jemmy.
Okay.
We're going to have to talk about the cops.
Oh, you mean how they're fucking useless?
I like that there's, like, one guy on the police force who does anything.
Every scene with the cops is literally just, like I was saying earlier, hey guys, guess what? Women get not taken seriously all the time. And I know that this is what they're trying to fucking say, because the reason they start even looking for Claire, who is the first girl that dies, is because her boyfriend comes in and is like, hey, why the fuck are you guys not doing anything about this? And all of a sudden, they want to start, you know, doing shit. Meanwhile, her friends have been like, all morning, hey guys, our friend is fucking missing, and we're getting these scary phone calls, and we think there's something fucked up going on. And they won't fucking listen until they bring a man in.
The wild thing, too, is that, so, towards the, like, middle, like, ish of the, or, like, towards the end, rather, Jess gets another fucked up phone call from Billy, so she calls the police and says, you know, hey, like, this might be something that you guys need to look into. And the cop that is on the other end of the line says to her, you know, we're very busy trying to figure out all of this murder stuff that's happening. You know, it's probably just one of your boyfriends playing a prank, no big deal. And then, later on, when she goes to the one cop with a head on his shoulders, who is the lieutenant played by John Saxon, who just keeps on playing cops in horror movies. He was Nancy's dad in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh my god, I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah. So this man's storied career of playing cops in horror movies, but he's the only cop who does shit. He says to the guy who had answered Jess's call earlier, he's like, Did it not even occur to you that the freaky phone calls might be connected to the missing girl and the murders?
Of course not. Why would it?
You didn't even dumb think fucks to connect those two dots, that the same sorority house where a girl went missing is getting, like, scary phone calls. Like, you didn't even think it might be the person doing the murders doing those calls.
Honestly, true to life to the effectiveness of cops in real life, so.
Honestly, I loved when Barb, like, pranked him. Like, she pulled a fast oh one on him.
Yeah. And the other guy was fucking laughing at him.
It told him that the, what was it, like, I don't know, 70s. The 70s were weird.
Yeah, it was like the, I don't even know what the terminology they used.
It wasn't the area code, it was something else. But it was like the area that they had to call. She told him that it was spelled fellatio.
F-E, yeah, the new one.
Yeah, the new one. And when he later talks to John Saxon, John Saxon and the other cop are just fucking snickering because this guy, for some reason, is an adult man who has never heard the word fellatio.
Fucking, what's his name? Nash. Sergeant Nash.
Dude looks like he's, like, in his 30s, at least.
At least.
How have you never heard the word fellatio before? He's like, oh, it's something dirty, isn't it?
He's homeschooled.
Yeah, my guy. She told you to call 1-800-BLOWJOBS.
He's one of those, like, sheltered homeschool Christian people. I'm sure they had those in the 70s as much as they have them now.
The mood whiplash of that scene where it's like, oh, that funny prank got played on him. Isn't that like right before the scene where Barb gets fucking iced?
Yeah, I think it is.
Oh, rough.
Super fucking rough.
At least she got one good goof in before she went upstairs, you know?
Honestly, that's how we should all hope to go out.
We should all aspire to leave this mortal world with just one last really good goof. Good for Barb, I guess.
It's inspiring, really.
Well, you know, maybe not so good considering I talked about this in the Malignant episode. But my favorite horror movie thing that I will never get tired of seeing is when, you know, killer breaks into a room or is like oh, this person's coming to kill someone. And the camera just pans over to a suspiciously pointy tchotchke.
Yes!
Oh!
The unicorn, the glass just unicorn.
The unicorn with this, like a glass unicorn statue with this big ass horn. And the camera just pans over to it and you're like, oh, fuck.
Oh, shit.
Someone's getting stabbed with a unicorn statue.
I have to wonder how much that scene in Malignant was inspired by this scene in Black Christmas, because now that I think about it, it is James Wan who has taken inspiration from Black Christmas before. Like, I would not be surprised in the slightest. I'd have to rewatch Malignant, but yeah, it would not surprise me at all.
It's just such a good trope, and every time I see it in a horror movie, it's delightful. And
oh,
I hope
yeah, baby.
Directors never stop doing it.
Truly. Give us more improbably pointy tchotchkes.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, it's just that feeling, just, you know, you see this fucking knick-knack with something really pointy on it, and you're like, oh, ho, ho.
That's gonna be a knife.
I know what the killer's gonna do with that. That's not to say that Barb's murder is, like, fun to watch. It's
no,
fucking
it's
harrowing and awful.
No, it's not, but also.
But also, trope is good.
Also good trope.
Also trope good, but also fuck.
I mean, if you want a version of that that's fun to watch, just watch Malignant.
Yeah, true. Fun version of that is true. It's just Malignant, yeah. So the moral that you learn from that is that you can't keep, like, you need to scan your bedroom. Anything in there that you think could be possibly used to stab somebody fatally, gotta get rid of it, man.
I was doing that because I record in my bedroom. I was just doing that and I was like, wait a minute, I have a big old fucking replica knife from American McGee's Atlas on my shelf.
Oh no. See, that's how the slasher's gonna get you,
Jimmy.
That's
how the slasher's gonna get me. I'm not getting rid of it though.
One thing that, just sort of going back to the sort of feminist themes of this movie that I found really, really cool is that it's not just, you know, the stuff with Jess and her abortion and the stuff about the cops not taking the women seriously. It's also just sort of this general feeling about the movie of all of the sorority sisters being whole rounded human beings.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
This movie treats them with a lot of respect. And I think it's especially evident because sorority settings in horror movies tend to be seen as an excuse to have just a house full of hot, dumb women.
Taylor, are you telling me that Mr. Ryan Murphy, in creating Scream Queens, did not create whole rounded characters in his
show? I've never seen Scream Queens, so I can't comment on that. What do you think, Jemmy?
No, Taylor, he didn't.
But, like, so, like, you know, you go to the 80s and, like, you know, there are all these, like, Roger Corman-produced movies that have names like Sorority House, fucking Big Boobs Massacre, Bikini Sorority House Wet T-Shirt Contest Murderer. Like, that's the reputation that horror films set in sororities tend to have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not to speak ill of women, but they're imaginary women, so I don't feel bad about it. The women in those movies tend to be just like, you know, bimbos.
Well, yeah, Taylor, they're women written by men.
Yeah. Well, these are women written by men, too, and
That's true. We shouldn't say that that men can't write women, because that's reductive and it's not true.
Capitals at the beginning of every word, women written by men.
Yeah. Yeah.
TM.
Stereotypically.
But, like, I just find it interesting that this film in particular, like, it's not the stereotype of the kinds of women who join sororities. Mm-hmm. There are dorky girls, you know, there are, like, very wholesome girls. There's Barb, who's sort of, you know, chain smoking and drinking and swearing. And, you know, Jess is just kind of very nice and chill. Like, they're just, they're whole people. And they don't just exist to be stereotypes. And I like that.
There really isn't, like, a stereotypical sorority girl among them. And I think that's very...
No. Cool. Yeah, they're just, you know... They're all very different people. And they all just like each other.
Yeah.
They're not catty or bitchy or backstabbing. They all have a genuine bond and they care about each other. That scene where Phil breaks down in Jess's mm-hmm. arms because she is so upset about Claire being missing and she's thinking about what her dad must be going through.
Yeah.
That's rough to watch, man.
Yeah.
Or the scene where Barb wakes up from a nightmare and she's having an asthma attack and yep. Jess is just... She hands her her inhaler. She's sort of petting her hair and she's saying, like, it's all right. It's going to be okay. Like, these are all girls who are just, they're just friends. They like each other.
Although I will say, in a, you know, the latter, I will say obligatory gay.
Gay. But that, I was thinking that too.
Obligatory homosexual, but.
Me but at no, Jess yeah, and right. Barb, I know what you are. Oh, I can't, thank you for bringing this up because I. Would have been so mad at myself if I didn't mention this. So, uh-huh. Barb, right?
Barb.
We love Barb.
We love Barb.
Love Barb. Barb is an icon. Barb, in the original script, was intended to be explicitly bisexual. I don't know whether it was studio interference or what, but it ended up being cut out of the script. But Margot Kidder and the director wanted it to be in the film in some way or another. So there's that scene where she's talking to Claire's dad in the dining room. And she's reading a Playboy.
Oh my god!
With a picture right. of a naked... She's got the fucking Playboy centerfold open.
Oh my god!
So Barb is, like, canonically bisexual.
Oh, I love that for her.
Like, there were earlier drafts of the script where she explicitly mentioned, like, an ex-girlfriend or something.
Man,
but yeah,
I
just think that's cool. Thank you for bringing up gay stuff so that I could talk about Barb the bisexual icon.
You're welcome. I wish we could have seen Margot Kidder kiss a woman.
So, God, so do I. So do I.
What could have been?
What fucking could have been? I just think it's so funny that they were like, all right, well, we can't say it outright, so how are we gonna get it across to the audience surreptitiously?
Just
maybe she could be looking
Playboy.
At a Playboy in one scene. I don't know.
Oh my god, I didn't even like put it. Somehow I didn't even like put those pieces together in my head. So
yeah,
I'm glad
she's
you
fully
brought
got
that
a
up.
Centerfold open.
Queen,
love it for her.
Queen,
bitch, me too. The fuck.
Genuinely, yeah. I don't think I'm ever going to watch the remake of this movie.
Which one? Aren't there two?
Oh, the 2019 one I'm talking about.
I've heard the 2006 one is like, like it's got good stuff and bad stuff in it, but I've heard nothing but bad about the 2019 one.
Yeah, I've heard
one.
The 2019 one is just complete and utter dog shit, like corporate feminism shit.
That's what I've heard.
Having now seen the original movie, I'm like, it is kind of disgusting.
And
that
the thing
they would
is,
just
like,
do corporate feminism on this movie.
I know a little bit more about the 2019 one and, what is in it than I do about the 06 one.
Yeah.
But, like, from what I know of the 2019 one, I guess spoilers for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that it's not one killer. It's, like, a yeah. cult of, like, misogynistic killers.
Led by fucking Carrie Elwes.
Led by Professor Carrie Elwes. Like, I honestly, if I watch it at all, it will be for him. Because I love him, and I want to see him do a bad American accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless they just do the thing that they did with Olivia Hussey and just tell him to use his normal voice.
But if you want to see Cary Elwes do an American accent with references to Black Christmas, just watch Saw.
Just watch Saw, yeah. But I think that the movie, or rather, I think that the story sort of loses some of the potency of its feminist message if it's explicitly about killers who are, you know, like, if you're intentionally trying to do a sort of, like, campus misogyny kind of story.
Yeah, I agree.
Like from what I know of the 2019 movie, it seems to be drawing on these sorts of real-life stories about, like, frat guys sexually assaulting sorority sisters and it sort of being covered up.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Like, I don't know, it just feels like...
I feel like you lose something if you take away the subtlety of this movie and make it more explicit.
Yeah. And, like, you can do explicit social message subtext, or rather text, in a movie well.
Fucking reviewed Us. We're gonna review Get Out at some point, which is, like, the gold standard of doing social commentary in movies.
But I think with this particular story, I think it's just more effective if it's, like, you have the killer on one end who is, like, a guy murdering women. And then on the other end, you have just, like, the world around these women, which is also in its own way incredibly misogynistic. Maybe not violently misogynistic like the killer is. Maybe they're not actually murdering women.
But, like, it is contributing to these women getting murdered.
Yes. And I think when you make the, like, societal misogyny, when you wrap that up with the literal man-murdering woman misogyny, it just is like, it feels like that is a weaker way to communicate that, because it makes the world seem less full, and it also feels like it's putting the blame on a few evil people rather than a culture of hatred towards women, which contributes to the increased level of violence against them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just word salading. I haven't seen the 2019 remake, but
that is the impression I get from it. And I don't think I want to watch. Like, all I've heard is complete dog shit about this thing. So I don't think I'm going to be looking to prove anything wrong.
It is funny for how much I know about the more recent remake. I don't know shit about the one from, like, the aughts.
I'm pretty sure it's just, like, a more direct remake. I don't know.
I've heard that it's, like, gory. Like, it's really gory.
Huh.
But even that might be wrong. I don't know.
See, that...
But yeah, I agree. I think I've heard that it's more of, like, a one-to-one remake rather than the 2019, which seems more like just, like, a spiritual remake. Like, it's taking inspiration from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I might watch the 06 one. I don't know.
It's strange to me to hear that it's the 06 one is gory, because this movie is so bloodless.
It really is. Everyone who gets killed gets either, if their murder is shown, it is shown, like, they're killed in a bloodless way, like Claire, who is suffocated with the plastic bag.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they're killed in a way that will be bloody, it's either just out of frame, like Barb.
Yeah.
You know, they only show her face, and he's stabbing her in the stomach.
Or it's completely off screen. Like, you don't see that little girl's corpse.
And you don't see Mrs. Mack. He throws that hook at her, and it cuts away. And you just see her feet go up into the attic. Which, like, as if I didn't need more reasons to not go into attic crawl spaces.
Truly.
I have one of those in my fucking house.
We just watched Better Watch Out, which also had a scary attic crawl space.
What is it with Christmas horror and scary attic crawl spaces?
Wait, Krampus has one too!
Fuck! There's some kind of thread here.
Something's happening.
And
here.
I'm pulling it apart. Like, imagine me with, like, a fucking Pepe Sylvia board.
You're unraveling it like a particularly ugly Christmas sweater.
I'm connecting the dots. You're not connecting shit. I'm connecting them. But yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I guess if you're going to establish yourself as a remake as being, like, different, certainly a way to do that is to take a relatively bloodless film and remake it super gory.
Yeah.
boards out on whether it succeeds. Like I said, I've heard mixed things. I know some people who like it. I know some people who really don't, but...
I have to wonder, does the 06 show Billy as, like, does it show his face? Like, I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
You know, that...
And, like, if it does, and the reason that it's so popular is because people want to fuck him, that's fine.
Maybe it's the 06 version of Billy that people want to fuck, now that I'm thinking about it.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think we have to watch the 06 Black Christmas to figure this out.
I think
we do.
I think this is now just, like, us planning, like a movie night. But yeah, you don't see Billy at all in this movie. You see him in shadow and silhouette, and you see his eye.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Huh.
We're getting to the end of this podcast, and neither of us have mentioned the thing that everybody mentions when talking about this movie, which is... Say it with me. Bob Clark also directed A Christmas Story.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did.
That is called having the range.
Yeah, it is. That is called having the range.
The way this man did a Christmas classic in two different directions. What a king.
And we love it for him. But yeah, I don't really have anything interesting to say about that other than, like, he has the range, darling, but... He did also direct A Christmas Story, and I've never seen A Christmas Story. Don't come for me.
Taylor!
Don't come for me! I haven't seen Home Alone, and I haven't seen A Christmas Story, but you know what I have seen? I've seen Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer 150 fucking times.
I hate you. I also have seen Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer 150 fucking times. I haven't watched it this year. I should probably do that this week.
We watch it all the time in my house. We have that shit on DVD. We watch it all the time. But I haven't... Listen, I know there's a channel... And I don't know what channel that plays A Christmas Story, like, on a loop on Christmas Day. And so I've seen bits of it because we'll be flipping channels on Christmas Day and, you know, we'll go past it. But, like,
I've never sat down and watched it. In fairness, it took my family an embarrassing amount of time to watch A Christmas Story, and now we watch it every year on Christmas, so.
Yeah, never seen it beginning to end. Feel free to tweet at me and tell me that I am... classless.
Yeah, you're a monster. Fuck you.
A rube and...
I actually can't host this podcast with you anymore.
A fake Christmas fan?
Oh,
if you
God.
Love Christmas, name five
you,
of their movies.
You fake
and I
Christmas
say,
girl. Fuck you.
Black Christmas, Better Watch Out. Like, it's all just Christmas horror. And then Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But yeah, he did also do A Christmas Story. So, king.
Insane. Love
king
that
of having
him.
The range.
Love that for him. Again, a Christmas classic in two different directions.
Good for him. Would you like to read some Letterboxd reviews?
Taylor, I would love to.
Our first review comes from, and I think this person's name is pronounced Kick. It's K-Y-K. Always thought the den mother with the hidden bottles of whiskey was iconic, but tonight I noticed Margot Kidder just crack open a beer at the police station. My queen. Four stars.
My queen. I also noticed that.
Scream Bro says, nobody. Olivia Hussey. Hello.
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 Hello. That's going to be like in my head now. It's going to be my echolalia for the next couple of days.
Just honestly, if anyone calls me, I'm going to be answering the phone like that from now until Christmas.
Please do.
Kate says, he would never get me because I don't answer my phone.
So
four and
true,
a half stars.
Though. That's why you can't actually make a Black Christmas that's in the modern day because no one's going to answer their fucking phone. They're going to be like, text me.
Yeah, even if they change it to cell phones, nobody answers a call from a number that they don't know.
Exactly.
If they're not in my contacts, I simply do not pick up the phone. Which has led to bad things for me on occasion, but I'll never change.
Truly.
Aaliyah says, starring John Saxon in the role that he refuses to stop playing. 4 stars.
What a king! And you know what? He found his niche, and he's sticking with it.
And
I say good for him.
And he eats it up every time.
And he eats it up every single time.
If there's one thing that a 70s or 80s horror movie is gonna do, it's gonna be to cast John Saxon as a gruff cop. And we love him for it.
And they're correct every time they do it.
Chris Evangelista says, at what point does Claude the Cat become complicit in the crimes? 5 stars.
Did Claude die?
I don't think,
did he make it? We don't see him again after a certain point, but, like...
Billy does imitate the cat's voice.
Oh, that's true.
So it's like, why, and so it's like, if the cat was alive, why wouldn't you just, like, poke the cat until it started meowing?
You know what? No body, no crime. I think Claude made it.
Wow, optimistic.
No body, no crime. I think he made it out. I think he left out the window or something, and that's what I'm choosing to believe, and I won't listen to anyone who says otherwise.
Yeah. I choose to, even if, because some people do think that, like, the implication of the ending of this movie is that Jess is going to die soon. So I think that even if that is true, I think Claude survived.
Claude is the real final girl.
Claude is the final girl?
He's very cute. He's a very cute cat.
I love a long-haired kitty. Maggie says, if I was in that house with those girls, it wouldn't have gone down like it did. I would have saved them all and solved misogyny and disbanded the police department.
So true.
And I believe, Maggie, that you could have done that.
I also believe Maggie could have done that.
Jillian B. says, I think what we're all thinking, which is simply Olivia Huss Slay, 4 stars.
Olivia Huss Slay, literal.
Olivia Huss Slay.
Parentheses, literal.
Can I just say, just quickly?
Yes.
If your name is Olivia Hussey, I love her, and I think she's a wonderful actress. Why wouldn't you change it?
I think it's a power move.
Olivia Slut. Like, girl, what?
I think it's a power move to not change it.
Yeah, she said, you're gonna make fun of me for my name? I'm gonna keep using it. Fuck you.
And we love that for her.
Grooveman says, from the director of Baby Geniuses, 4.5 stars.
Is that for real?
It's for real. It's for real.
This man has the most varied film career I've ever seen in my life.
If there's one thing Bob Clark is gonna do, it's everything.
He's like, cool, I'm gonna do a Christmas horror movie that becomes a cult classic. A Christmas classic, period. And also Baby fucking Geniuses.
Baby Geniuses. Honestly, I love it for him.
What the fuck else has this man directed?
Ryan Chagg says, currently enjoying the thought experiment of switching the protagonist of Bob Clark's Christmas classic so that Ralphie ends up foiling a serial killer's plan with absolutely zero help from the police, and Olivia Hussey's problems are magically solved by getting a BB gun for Christmas. Also, Margot Kidder can be there to beat the shit out of Scott Farkas. And I don't know who Scott Farkas is because I've never seen A Christmas Story, but, you know.
He's like the bully character.
Yeah. I think Margot Kidder should be able to beat the shit out of him.
I agree.
And maybe give him beer.
Great news.
Oh, God. Are you on an IMDb journey?
I'm on a Letterboxd journey. I'm just going to say Bob Clark also directed Baby Geniuses 2. Super Babies.
That's the one with John Voight.
Yeah.
John Voight is just in that.
Just a little. Just to let you fucking know. Just you can go to bed thinking about that tonight.
I'm sorry. I think you need to give that movie the full respect of its full title, which is Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I misread the poster that I'm looking at right now.
Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2. Put some motherfucking respect on that film. That classic piece of cinema.
I'm so sorry.
I have a very distinct memory of us having a movie day in elementary school where we were all corralled into one room with a fucking wheel, like TV on wheels, and we were made to watch Super Babies, Baby Geniuses 2. And the whole time I was just thinking to myself, why can't I just go play on the playground? Even totally. At the age of a small child, I knew that movie was dog shit.
Because they were trying to introduce you to cinema, Taylor.
To art. To they art. Showed us a motherfucking art film.
Film d'art, as they call it in France.
Anyway, we've lost the plot. I just wanted to share that anecdote.
Yes. You got any more Letterboxd reviews for us?
I don't, unfortunately. Because they were all just, like, long paragraphs about the film, and I'm like, that's not what I'm here for, but I respect your dedication.
Sorry. Respect, but also we're here for the memes.
What is your star rating for Black Christmas?
I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd, and I think I'm going to stick to that here. It's a great little Christmas slasher with some cool social commentary.
I'm going to say 5 because 70s movies are implicitly for me.
That's true. That's very true. And you're so valid for that.
Yeah. I think it's delightful. I think that, honestly, I think this needs to be added into my Christmas movie rotation. I can't believe I haven't seen it since high school. I don't know why I haven't. But I'm glad I finally watched it again, and I'm probably gonna be watching it again for years and years to come for Christmas. So,
and I love that for you.
Thank you, Bob Clark.
All right. This is usually the part of the episode where I would tell you what movie we have coming up next, but we are taking a small break for the holidays. We will be back with you on January 18th with something new and exciting. We haven't quite figured out what we want to do yet, but we will obviously have more than enough time to do that over the break.
Thank you guys for listening. I know that, you know, we don't usually get like this corny at the end of the podcast, but like, I don't know. I'm just thinking about the fact that this is our second holiday season in a row that we've been doing this podcast, and how nice it is that we have people who listen to us and enjoy listening to us. And I'm just feeling all warm and fuzzy about it.
The warm and fuzzy Christmas feelings about it, holiday feelings.
Thank you to everybody who tweets at us, especially movie recommendations. Yes. We've got a few of those recently. We love to see that.
We will just definitely get to them all.
In general, just, I don't know.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for thanks for having us in your ears and letting us talk about our silly little movies.
You know, we're in your ears like a parasite from a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
As is and our we're brand. There. Yeah, we're burrowing in there to, like, I don't know, give you evil sickos thoughts or something.
And also to occasionally talk about Marvel, question mark?
Yeah! That too. But yeah, so, we will see you guys in 2023.
Yes, and from us to you, happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. There are God knows how many fucking holidays in December. Whatever you celebrate, I hope you have a good one. Even if you don't celebrate anything, hi, have a good couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Have a good new year. And we will see you on the 18th with something new and exciting. Bye, guys.
Bye.